The Saskatchewan Healthcare Coalition is hosting the All for Public Healthcare Rally in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, May 4th. It's free and you're invited. This rally is happening because our public healthcare system does not have the support it needs to meet the diverse needs of all Saskatchewan residents. For years, it has been underfunded, ignored, and hindered, so join Donna and I in person on May 4th in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan for a walk, speeches, networking, and community building. Link for more information is in the show notes. Hope to see you there. I ran into health and wellness expert Sylvia Marusik at the 2024 Saskatchewan Safety Seminar, and I knew right away we needed to make some content together. We talked about everything from how to address substance use at work, to Ramdas, to Buddhist teachings, to how my own substance use influenced my place in workplace culture. It was a great talk, and I'm excited to share it with you. But first, what's up? My name's Dan, podcaster, keynote speaker, and advocate, and this is Hard Knocks Talks, your addictions podcast. I want to shout out the Saskatchewan Safety Council for bringing me to their 2024 Saskatchewan Safety Seminar to foster productive conversations about substance use like this one with my friend, Sylvia Marusik. So, Sylvia, you and I met on LinkedIn.
We did, like
3 years ago. Like it was right when I started Hard Knocks, and we had grandiose plans and nothing came to fruition, and here we are. The universe has brought us together.
That is so cool, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is an accident.
So you work on workplace stress, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a huge part of what I talk about is workplace health and safety, workplace stress, workplace wellness. Mm-hmm. I do personal health stuff as well, but yeah, that's why I'm here.
Yeah. And like workplace stress is to me, it's sort of a limiting language to use, because people that go to work, they every single one of them lives in community. And stress often propagates from outside of work and comes into work.
Right.
Now, this includes problems like substance use, like mental health challenges, whether it's circumstantial or something that someone is challenged with otherwise.
What I think is interesting about what you've just said is, like, how do we even refer to it as workplace stress when we don't know where the chicken and the egg is?
Right.
But everything that happens to us outside of work comes into work, and vice versa. So if there's substance abuse, if there's lack of connection, if there's relationship issues, if there's financial problems, that all comes to work, and it shows up at work and is also expanded by workplace stress.
Yeah.
And so one of the places where I have control, because I can't be in people's homes, is I can help.
You can show up at work.
I can show up at work, and I can make workplaces more aware of the consistent opportunity that they have to intervene and support people, because people have to show up every day, or mostly have to show up every day. The other thing is the cost of these things shows up at work. Therefore, you need to address it, right? Yep. The stress leaves, the absenteeism, presenteeism, all of that shows up at work. So that's why we need to address it at work as well.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does.
Plus, one of the things I talked about this morning is there's a moral issue here as well. We need to support people because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
We need to, not just from, you know, management to employees, but also employee to employee. You don't have to like people.
Yeah.
But just the morality of doing no harm to another individual at the minimum.
Yeah.
And at the maximum, helping and supporting their mental health in whatever way you can.
Yeah.
That's a right. It's a privilege. It's a responsibility that we all have.
Yeah.
You know, Ram Dass said, we're just here to walk each other home.
Yeah. And that's a beautiful thing. I know that when I was struggling with substance use, I went from places where substance use, particularly marijuana, was like everybody did it.
Yeah.
You know, at break time, at coffee time, or whatever, as I moved forward into my career, it was still prevalent, but not so much so, right? So when I moved into certain organizations, I was the black sheep, right? And in my own mind, I thought that no one knew.
Right.
Right? But looking back now, I can see, like, when I would come sit in the coffee room, it would get quieter, you know? And then so I start, oh, don't feel sorry for me. I learned valuable lessons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess I shouldn't tell you how to feel. You can feel sorry for me if
you
want.
Well, my heart always hurts when people suffer, but I also recognize that we don't grow if we don't suffer.
All of the best things that have ever happened to me in my life came directly after an egregious amount of suffering.
Yes, mine too. Right.
You know, and when we talk about substance use, oftentimes people still think that this is like a moral failing.
Yes.
You know, and the symptoms that we're, the behavior that we're displaying are symptoms of our disorder, in fact.
Right.
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 So how can we address that? How can we educate people in a way that they will be receptive to when we're talking about these things?
That's a really good question, Daniel, because, you know, there's a Buddhist saying that comes to my mind when I think about this quandary, like, how do we educate people? And the Buddhist saying goes, the teacher arrives when the student is ready. So you can throw policy and procedure and statistics and knowledge at people all you want, but if they're not interested and they're not, there's no personal relevance to them, they're less likely to change their behavior or to be open to changing their behavior. Mm-hmm. But now that we're really promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion, we're starting to have more discussions around topics that sort of are broader than what we have traditionally thought of as diversity, equity, and inclusion issues. It's not just about gender equality. It's not just about, you know, not racially discriminating against people. It's also about recognizing that somebody has a substance abuse disorder, mm-hmm, or condition or issue or battle, and that we need to support them. It's also about understanding that if you are, you know, if you have a factory, a production facility that gets really, really hot in the summertime, the menopausal women in that factory might need chillet vests because they're already dying from their own internal body temperature. Now it's 10 degrees hotter.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like expanding the idea of diversity, equity, and inclusion to include everyone, mm-hmm, who has a difference, mm-hmm, which is really all of us. Mm-hmm. And so if employees understood that, that's one form of education or culture change or policy change that we can kind of promote. But the other thing, you know, and I talked about it this morning in my keynote, it's so important to stop asking what's wrong with people who are different or who behave differently, or instead of assuming a moral failing, like what's wrong with Daniel that he has this addiction, asking what's happened to that person. Mm-hmm. And that leaves us room for empathy. And once you have room for empathy, you realize that could be you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's that beautiful quote, there for the grace of God go I, mm-hmm, or but for the grace of God go I. You know, whether you're religious or not religious, these things can happen to anybody, anytime, any socioeconomic status.
We've seen it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. This is not a moral failing. This is about what's happened to someone. Mm-hmm. And if you recognize that you could be one horrible circumstance away from something like this, maybe that creates some personal relevance for people.
Yeah.
And you go,
Yeah.
Maybe I need to support this person.
You know, in my story, my willingness to change came after the opportunity was presented.
How fascinating.
Yeah.
Can you share a little bit about that?
Well, yeah. My viewers have all heard it before, but I'll tell it again.
It's, you know what? You have new viewers.
Yeah.
All the time.
I'm sure I do. Yes,
yeah.
That is true. So it was my mother that I was lost. She didn't know what to do. Well, she did know what to do because this is what happened. I was lost. I was using meth. I was near homeless. My wife had left a kid, all of the bad things. And my mom came and she took me out for lunch one day. Now, my mom's been in the addictions field for 40 years. She's now retired. And she started plotting. She said, well, Dan, you need to go back up north and work, and you need to get your housing taken care of. You need to get access to your son. You need to do all these things. And I stopped her and I said, Mom, don't I need to get sober first?
Yeah.
And she said, yes. And she pulled out the form and it was all filled out. And there might have even been a date on it. I don't know.
Wow.
But she pulled it out. She set it down. She said, sign right there. She like, sign right there. I signed it. And 10 days later, I was off to detox. The barriers had become so low that all I had to do was sign a piece of paper that was already in front of me. I did not seek it out.
Wow.
I did not go for lunch that day expecting to sign that paper. But when that opportunity was there,
yeah,
and I could handle it, like with the limited thoughts that I was able to process,
yeah,
it was just like, off I go.
You know, and she obviously believed in you.
She Jedi mind tricked me.
She did. She did. And I love her for that.
Yeah.
I actually did that with a client once. So I had, this is an interesting story. So I had done a presentation in somewhere in Alberta,
mm-hmm.
and had gone out for lunch with a group of young women afterwards. And we just had such a marvelous visit, and there was one young woman, so she would have been young enough to be my daughter, in her 20s. And some months after this event, I got an email from her describing a long history of addiction to meth and asking if I would be willing to work with her, and that she had been to counseling and it just didn't work and blah blah blah. So I said, let's hop on a call. Let's see if we're a good fit together, because you have to feel safe with me and I have to know that you're willing to do the work.
And you don't necessarily have an abundance of experience working with people who are specifically coming back.
Absolutely zero.
So were you apprehensive?
No.
All right, let's do it.
I'm going to tell you why. My only experience was working inpatient psychiatry with people with addictions. So they would be there to detox and get on medication and so on. So that was my experience.
So not really any soul work.
Nope.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you the reason, Daniel, this is going to sound pretentious. I believe in my calling.
Yeah.
So much so that I don't fear it.
When someone comes into your life, it's for a reason.
1,000%. Like,
yeah.
This is what I'm here for on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't second guess it. I don't question it anymore. I did. But I don't. And
yeah.
The surrender that I experience as a result of that knowledge is complete freedom and confidence that if I'm supposed to work with that person, whatever needs to be in my soul and in my heart for them is exactly what's going to come out. So, of course, I'm thinking, we got to get her off these drugs, right? And then I was like, Kate, just check
your
brain.
She was still using.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so the first conversation was, you know, she told me all about how the counselors that she'd been to were very judgmental and you have to stop and what's the matter with you? And like she said, I felt so judged and I know I need to stop and I want to stop, but I can't seem to. And I said, so tell me when you use, like, what are you doing? So it's like before she goes to work, at work on her coffee break, before she leaves for lunch, she goes home for lunch, she comes back, mid-afternoon she uses again at work, and then she uses in the evening and whatever. And I said, okay, so if you want to work with me, I have one condition. And she was silent on the other end. And
so here we go.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go.
She was so primed for this. And Daniel, this did not come from my head. I got a divine download, literally, that said, say this, because I had no idea what to do with this. And out of my mouth comes, we need to keep your job. You can use as much as you want outside of your workplace. You will never do this in your workplace, on the grounds of your workplace, at work, ever. If you are going to work with me, you can double end it. You can go home 3 times a day if you want. I don't care. But you are not going to lose your job by getting caught using at work. That's my condition. And she said, I agree to that. So I said, continue with that. And here's some stuff for you to think about and work on. Just gave her a few things to think about and to journal about. And I said, you tell me when you want the next session. She said, because that's how I work. I don't tell you what you need. You tell me.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, can we talk in 2 weeks? And I said, yeah. So 2 weeks later, I said, so how did the last 2 weeks go? Did you use at work? She says, no. And she says, you're not going to believe this. I stopped using. And I said, I'm not ready for that. We're not there yet.
That's a very selfish thing to say.
Oh, I said it with a laugh, right? I said, like, hold up.
I developed a whole program for you.
Right? I'm like, tell me why. Why did you stop? She said, you proved to me that if I could stop doing it at work, I could stop doing it anywhere.
Wow.
She had a couple of relapses over a few months. They were super brief. But the non-judgment and the putting the power back in her hands is really all that she needed. And that's what your mother did
to you. That's exactly what she allowed me space to say the words. She knew, and I know that she knew, and it makes sense to me. If she would have said, Dan, you need to get sober.
Yeah.
The door would have closed. The opportunity would not have presented itself.
And she also treated you like you were more than the addiction, right? Which is how I treated this client without realizing that's what I was doing.
I mean, I'm pretty sure she even bought me a beer that day.
How lovely.
Yeah.
Your mother's an angel.
She may not have. It's very foggy in my mind. In fact, the way that I tell the story, she's like, it didn't happen like that. I'm like, well, that's how I remember it. So that's how I'm telling it.
And that's how it feels to you.
Yeah.
And it felt like your salvation, your moment of salvation, right? Yeah. Your moment of hope.
Yeah. She remembers it in a different restaurant than I do. I remember it being at McDonald's. She remembers it being at a different restaurant. So,
that's so curious.
But I wouldn't have gotten a beer at McDonald's, but I remember it being at McDonald's, but I also remember I don't know. I remember what I need to remember, I guess.
Do you know, there's a quote, you don't remember, I'm paraphrasing it, so I'm going to butcher it. Basically, it goes like this. You won't remember what people say, but you will always remember how they made you feel.
I have heard that, yes.
It's the same with circumstances. We don't always remember the details of the circumstance, mm-hmm. but we remember how we felt there or in that moment.
Yeah.
And you got your power back.
Yeah.
And that is the most beautiful thing in the world. And I think, you know, when we talk about people with addictions, with mental health issues, with whatever the situation is, autism, whatever it is.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, if you can remember that that person is so much more than the label, and the label might be important for them. I've just recently heard someone talk about how important it was to identify with their label as autistic. Like, I'm a very non-label person.
Yeah, yeah.
But I respect that for some people that is very important because it gives some, you know,
it's almost like a safety.
Yes.
Like a level of knowing.
Right.
I am this.
Some method of understanding something, right?
Yeah.
So I respect that. But we are so much more than that.
Yeah.
And if we remember what every human being wants, let's go back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? It's our absolute most basic need is food, shelter, clothing. Then we need to feel safe. And then we need the critical one is love and belonging.
Yeah.
Now, you do not have to love the people you work with, but you got to make them feel like they belong.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you are doing harm. If you are one of those people that is making someone else feel like they don't belong, you are doing harm. And I am not being dramatic. That is a fact. So if that's what you're doing, stop.
Knock it off.
Knock it off.
Stop it right now.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And especially if somebody's going through something like... Mm-hmm. Do no harm. That is the Hippocratic Oath. And it's actually the oath that we should all take as human beings when we arrive on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
Do no harm to any living creature. Plants, not trees, not... You know what I'm saying?
I heard the other day, it was in a conversation regarding harm reduction. And there is a doctor somewhere in the world. I'm not sure where. I think it's here in Saskatchewan. I'm not sure. I don't remember. But what I do remember is that he changed his Hippocratic Oath. From to cause no suffering.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Because sometimes to reduce suffering, a little bit of harm takes place.
Yes. You know what? That's absolutely fair and reasonable.
Yeah.
I understand that. Because sometimes, we have to use some tough love with people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which might hurt them.
Well, and if we're talking about harm reduction and we're talking about a regulated supply or clean supplies. There's a big heated thing going on in Saskatchewan right now where the government is defunding harm reduction and taking away people's access to clean pipes and stuff like that.
Oh.
Well, they're not taking away access, but they're not paying for it anymore.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
So, and to me, like, it seems silly to me. I don't ever remember once when I was addicted to meth thinking, I can't find a clean pipe. I guess I'll quit.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So what that that does is by, like, they think they're doing no harm.
Right.
By taking away these supplies and reducing access to, I don't know what they think they're reducing access
right.
to. They're increasing access to HIV and Hep C, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
But that's where harm reduction comes in. And like, okay, I'm going to give you this so that you're going to cause harm to yourself, but it's going to be less harm than you would otherwise cause.
Right.
You know?
Right. It's so, mitigated harm in a
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, it's reducing yeah. suffering.
Yeah, so, absolutely. And yeah. I totally support the change of that Hippocratic oath to that. And
yeah.
I think that would be a very good motto to adopt as humans.
Yes. Yes.
Because honestly, there is no species on the planet that causes more suffering to its fellow, you know, species
yeah.
than humans do.
Yeah.
And we do it with words just as much, if not worse, than we do it physically to one another.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of what leads to people, you know, to fall into addiction is... Like, they are so disconnected from love and belonging and acceptance and feeling like they have value
yeah.
on this planet. That's yeah. not okay.
Yeah.
And if we have the capacity to reduce that, why wouldn't we want to do that?
Yeah. Thanks so much, Sylvia.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure having you. It was a pleasure finally meeting you.
It's so good. Like, yeah. this is such a beautiful experience to meet a LinkedIn connection and colleague who
yeah.
I've only ever seen virtually.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know what? You are just a beautiful soul. And
oh.
the work that you do
thank you.
Is life-changing. You save lives. And I know that's why you were spared.
Well, I hope that's true.
I know it.
Who's to say?
Yeah, but you're here and you're doing it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. If you want to foster productive conversations about substance use in your community, organization, or event, reach out to me at daniel@hardknockstalks.com to learn more about all our public speaking opportunities. Once again, thanks to the Saskatchewan Safety Council for having me at their seminar. It was an amazing opportunity. That's it for now. Take care.